And so what sort of falls away in this practical scenario is, one, doing the microanalysis, and two, really optimizing macronutrient distribution. Well, first, the micronutrient analysis is tedious. I've done it, doing it a lot all the time. So just a lot of time. And as long as your diet isn't too weird, they're not trying to be too extreme with their choices, they probably are going to get there. Otherwise, we'd have a lot of nutrient deficiencies just around us. And then also, I don't think that a lot of people need to really optimize their macronutrient distribution. Because if people are eating just mixed whole foods and they've already set enough protein and they're keeping their calories constant, by default, carbs and fat are just going to fall in the middle ground. They're going to be in this 30 to 40% range, unless they're trying to be, I really want to be low fat or I really want to be low carb. Most people just kind of fall in this middle ground, and that's going to be fine enough for many of us.
Hello and welcome to the Consistency Project with EC Sinkowski. My name is Patrick Cummings, and every episode, I have the privilege of having a discussion with EC on subject matters that range from nutrition to fitness to the choices we can all make to live a healthier, more functional life. By exploring both the principles at play and the actions worth carrying out as a result, it's our goal to get you thinking, get you moving, and get you taking more consistent steps toward optimizing your well-being. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, how are you, EC?
Awesome.
Awesome. I hinted at it, I finally hinted at this episode, which we've been building towards for years, which is optimization. The name of your company is Optimize Me Nutrition.
It sure
and yet is. you have this oddly I don't know what the right word is, but this oddly
disdain
for this concept of optimization. So there's always been this funny tension with what you're doing and some of your opinions, and I'm excited we can actually kind of peel some of them back and actually find the nuance and look at why some of it makes sense, some of it doesn't make sense, and all that stuff. So we're gonna talk about what diet optimization actually looks like. And so what do we need to know going into this conversation?
I know. Yeah, we're going to be murking around in gray. I think there is a lot of lip service to this idea of optimization. I do find there's a little bit of tension with the fact that I've named my company Optimize Me Nutrition. So apparently I believe in optimization to some degree, mm-hmm. and I certainly do. I thought, you know, maybe this is the perfect time to talk about what would diet optimization really look like? You know, if I believe in some level of optimization, how is somebody going to actually go about doing that? Mm-hmm. And so relying on the Merriam-Webster definition a little bit, when I say optimization, I mean making a process as effective as possible. And they use some other descriptors that I didn't love as much, like perfection, but I really like that word effective, meaning producing the desired outcome or result, because that's what has to ground all of our optimization stuff. Like, what's the measurement that we're chasing? And more so, that metric has to be relevant. Data that's not relevant is just noise. Mm-hmm. And so we talk about them all the time, but the outcomes or the goals that I find that my clients want are weight, health, and performance. And generally, I find that my clients want it all. They don't just want weight. They don't just want health. They want to achieve, right, they're greedy. They want to achieve a weight that meets their aesthetic goals. They want to be sure that they're doing everything to prevent disease and preserve a certain quality of life. And they wouldn't mind being able to run faster and do more pull-ups. Now, the good news of this, that they're greedy, is that from a nutrition standpoint, generally, we can get them from the same approaches, that achieving health and weight or achieving your weight and fitness outcomes, generally we're going to do some very similar approaches. So it's not like you have to make the decision, well, I'm only going to do fitness and I'm only going to do health for the most part. There's going to be some examples though. If somebody really wants to have an extreme amount of weight loss, of course it's going to get unhealthy at a certain point. But a lot of the people that I work with aren't willing to have any of those trade-offs. They're only willing to push each of the metrics as far as all of them will stay high. Mm-hmm. And so that's really what I want to talk about, is how to optimize them all. And I think, again, absent of some extreme examples, it is possible to optimize nutrition for that endpoint.
Mm. As we've joked before, we should have named the podcast Gain Muscle and Lose Weight. Is that what it was? Yeah. One of the first episodes we did was something like that.
Increasing muscle and decreasing body fat.
It's like, sign me up for some of that.
Still the most popular episode, probably.
Yeah. Okay. So let's maybe start by defining what exactly is getting optimized then for these three buckets, the weight, the health, and the fitness or performance. You said that part of that is actually kind of aiming towards something. Like, what is the thing that we're trying to improve? And so what does that look like? Where do we want to begin with that idea?
Yeah, I mean, we have to figure out like what data we're looking at for each of these outcomes. And I think weight, you know, we can start there. I think that one sounds mm-hmm. pretty obvious. It might also be in reality the least clear of them. You know, of course, we could be talking about looking at your weight in terms of pounds or kilograms and see if mm-hmm. it changes in a direction. I also think that we should just throw body composition in this category as well, which is probably a little bit more relevant to our crew, that they might not care as much so long as they're as lean as they want to be. Mm-hmm. I think why weight gets a little bit unclear or sticky, as I often like to say, is that people care about weight often for aesthetic reasons. So sometimes it's why are we using a number on the scale when you care more about the reflection or how your clothes fit, right? But what's hard about the reflection or how the clothes fit is it's harder to track changes in any sort of data collection way. The other thing about weight that I think we forget is there's a wide range of healthy weights and body compositions. And it's really hard to put a definitive guidance on this because there's always going to be tons of exceptions. But the main point I want to say is health is not only the leanness that we see on the cover of magazines. Those individuals can be healthy, but you know, body fats of 20 to 30% for women, and I think it was 12 to 20% for men, are where we find longevity associated with. And those certainly aren't what we see on the cover of magazines. And so I think the point is here with weight is once you're within a certain range, picking a value in that range is purely an aesthetic endeavor. Mm. And aesthetic by default is subjective. So you can watch the scale all you want. You can collect that data all you want. It might not actually change your visual perception or belief, but I digress. Let's just say for the point of this, if we're tracking on weight, we're looking at pounds or kilograms and we're seeing that it gets into a range that is healthy. Okay. Health, a little bit of a tough one here because we know, as we've just talked about before, that we can't use one marker for health. And it's better to use a collection of well-accepted markers to establish that everything's going okay versus just, say, looking at weight or just, say, looking at fasting glucose. But I think looking at the basic collection of them from your weight to those numbers that you get measured at the doctor's office with your annual physical that are fasting glucose, HGA1C, your lipid panel, which includes cholesterol. And they also do basic things like blood count and liver function, all that stuff. That's great. And you want all those markers to be in the healthy ranges and you want to stay there. Once you're in the healthy ranges, again, it's not this idea of that lower is always better. The more important thing to think about is when you're in that range, what is the trend of those values across time? Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're in health, if you start in healthy and then you start to trend towards unhealthy, we have a problem. So that's really when you want to think about it, that there's a red flag. But if you're in the healthy ranges and they're just sort of staying there, even if they're slightly higher than and slightly lower, there's no one value to shoot for within those ranges. That's just fine. These are going to be typically a little bit harder for people to test just because we don't really go to the doctors that often and be like, how's my liver function, right? Like, it's just going to be...
You don't do that? I'm in there every couple of weeks.
It's going to be probably every year we sort of check in with that. The thing is, too, with these health markers that I always like to remind people of, they're not a guarantee. Just because these health markers are fine now, it's not predictive of what will happen. Disease still can happen, even though these markers look okay. And this is probably something I don't talk about that frequently, but I think it is part of the health optimization picture is the annual visits to the doctor also are from a preventative point of view. And that the doctor asks you how you're doing, any complaints, does a physical examination where, yes, they're actually looking for certain things. They learn about your family history. And then they're going to give you certain recommendations based on your age and all of that information. Maybe it's vaccinations. Maybe it's different types of screenings. I mean, a perfect example is mammograms in women around age 40, right? Those start for breast cancer. And so going to these appointments and regularly doing them is actually another tool in your arsenal for this health optimization. Because if we can ward off any disease by early detection, that is going to help get after this health that we want. The problem with this is it's not really an optimizable metric that we're going to track and look on. Like, either you went or you didn't. But I do like to mention that. And then for when looking at performance or fitness, I think this is pretty straightforward. Did you run faster? Did you get more pull-ups? You have to pick something and just decide whether or not the nutrition change helped or hurt that. Of course, with my CrossFit community, they're going to want it all. So they're going to want to look at both the running and the pull-ups. But yeah, does it get better in the direction you want? But those are the really metrics that I would use weight or body composition, standard health markers that I get every year at an annual physical, and then performance metrics. And you want all of them to be in the normal healthy ranges and just stay there over time. I guess performance is a little bit different in the sense that you'd always want that to continuously improve, but you only want that to continuously improve so long as health and weight stay in the healthy ranges.
Right. So much as so they didn't push everything right. else out of those ranges.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. So in advance of this chat, you sent me four diet areas where you see somebody or you think that people can experiment in pursuit of those kind of three buckets of optimizing those three buckets. And those four diet areas are protein intake, total calories, macro distribution, and quality. So maybe let's do first one first and start with protein.
Yeah. I mean, how to optimize this one? I think it's pretty straightforward. You just play with different levels of protein intake. I think most people probably know that I recommend this 0.7 grams of protein per pound of body weight. But yeah, you could play with higher and even lower of that. I would suggest doing increasing or decreasing by 0.1. So maybe you go from 0.7 up to 0.8, then you try 0.9 and go up to 1, et cetera. And then you just put it into practice and see what happens to those weight, health, and fitness markers that we mentioned. So that's just first one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So second was total calories.
Yeah. And this one's also pretty straightforward as well. Of course, now instead of weighing just your protein sources or protein grams, we now have to weigh and measure everything in the diet to get a certain number of total calories. And I would consider this sort of step two, such that you're going to continue to eat the protein level that you just established. And now you're weighing in everything else to see what the total calories are, also contributing from carbs and fat. And you're going to see, of course, what happens to the weight, health, and performance outcomes. You know, which direction would you move them? Well, if you're already lean and very active, you may consider trying adding calories to the diet. Mm. If somebody's very active, very lean, very high volume athlete, there is a potential that they're under eating. Just because your caloric budget is so high, do you actually get through all the food that you need each day just due to other demands on life and logistics of eating all of that? So there are some people just even not necessarily wanting mass gain that they actually might want to play with increasing it. Of course, for other people that are looking for weight loss, they would try decreasing the calories. But with this total calories thing, and especially because it's related to weight, we just have to get right in our mind these limitations of these weight, health, and performance measurements that we've mentioned before, because there is the potential that your performance goes up, your body composition is acceptable, but the number on the scale also goes up. Mm-hmm. I actually was just speaking with a client about this. It's sort of like, well, I like my performance there, but the number on the scale went up. And so you have to decide, you know, maybe I'm already in a healthy range. And so this number on the scale going up is not actually a bad thing because I'm just within this range. And I'm thinking more from like a classic kind of lower is better mindset. It's just hard. Weight, you know, again, a lot of us want these aesthetic outcomes or we think lower is better. And that doesn't always square with this idea of data collection for optimization.
Okay. So then the third one is macro distribution.
Yeah. So at this point, you know, your protein level, you know, your total calories. And so you really should at this point also know kind of your understanding of where you generally fall on your macro distribution. You should know how those calories are shaking out to how many in a percent are going to protein, to carbs and fat. So let's just say that somebody's at like 25% protein. That's often where the 0.7 will put somebody, maybe down at 20, but let's just say 25% of calories are going to protein. Carbs, they find out they typically average about 45% and fat is about 30%. Okay, so now to do this optimization of macronutrient distribution, you would hold protein and calories constant, and then you would play with how many of those remainder calories are going to carbs and fat. So maybe carbs goes up to 50%, fat down to 25%. See what happens. Okay, and then you continue to do this. You move carbs up to 55%, fat further down to 20%. See what happens. You can go in the other way too. Carbs down to 40%, fat up to 35%, and so on. You get the idea.
Yep.
Technically, you could do all ranges that are feasible while protein is being held at, you know, 25%. You could also do percentages like I'm moving carbs up to 53% and fat down to 27%. Mm-hmm. Couple things here. We do have to remember that fat is an essential nutrient. So we need some fat in the diet. So you wouldn't actually ever bring that down to zero. We also have to remember that food, we don't really eat food. It's just fat. You know, not a lot of people sit down to a butter stick. Maybe you do, Patrick, but... But so that we have this logistical issue of it's really hard to manipulate things that precisely. Yep. So there's going to be a point when it gets really weird to make those number works. And there's also going to be a point at which it's just too little of a change to notice. Like if you're changing your macro percents by 1%, we might be only flirting with like 5 grams different. No one is going to notice that change on a practical level. So generally here, when we're kind of optimizing this macronutrient distribution, what I give as guidance is I wouldn't go above 50% on either carbs or fat. And then by default, we also find that carbs or fat won't go below 20% to make all of them add up to 100. And I would change them by just 5 or 10%. That's going to be sensitive enough to figure out what's going on there. I think the one only exception there, and I've touched on it before, just high volume athletes, because their calories are so high, their carbs might actually climb 50, 60% plus. But anyway, that's what you're doing. You're making these changes of the carb to fat ratio. And again, checking in with weight, health, and performance outcomes at each of those values.
Got it. Okay. So the last one then is quality. What do we mean by that, and how would we optimize it?
Yeah. So when I say quality here, I generally am talking about the micronutrients, vitamins, and minerals, but I also include in quality fiber and phytochemicals. And now phytochemicals are those thousands and thousands of plant compounds like curcumin and turmeric that we've all heard about. And people are really researching the effects of these various compounds. The problem with things like phytochemicals is, one, they aren't essential. Two, we don't really know what they all are. We don't know if we've figured out all the different phytochemicals, and we definitely don't know, three, what they're all doing. And so there's no way that anyone in sort of their normal life could track on them to then sort of optimize them, right? Like if we don't even know what they all are and what they're all doing, like what the heck are we optimizing? I guess you could say, and this is what I recommend to people just broadly, eat a diversity of plant matter, but then how are we measuring that? I mean, how do we know that the 10 things is really better than the 20 things is better than the 10 things because we don't know what the phytochemicals are in them, right? So anyway, so when I say optimizing quality from a practical perspective, I really am talking about looking at the micronutrients and looking at fiber intake. And that's realistically what we could actually do. Now, let's just take one example, because again, we know that there's 28 micronutrients. Let's just say that we're going to optimize magnesium. Well, the RDA, the recommended dietary allowance for magnesium is about 400 milligrams per day. And so optimization would be like, okay, well, what happens at 350 and 375 and 400? You get the idea. You could go to any value in between as well. You know, theoretically, it's possible to do that experiment. Practically, it's impossible. Again, because we don't eat magnesium. Maybe you do. Maybe you do,
Patrick. With my butter sticks. Butter sticks.
And magnesium. That's awesome. But we eat food with mixtures of nutrients in it. So you might be like, well, I'm going to eat more leafy greens to increase my magnesium. But guess what's also going up? Vitamin K, right? So it's impossible to really be dosing these things such that you're really only changing the one factor. Unless, again, you come up with some scenario where you're going to eat the same exact thing for 4 weeks and then just supplement with magnesium. But again, it's just, this is unlikely. So practically what I would do in this case is I would, you know, at this point, you've already weighed and measured everything, continue that process, and then analyze the micronutrient data for, let's say, a week or so. Pick enough days that you have a good representation of your diet, and you're going to figure out, am I hitting the RDAs for the micronutrients? Am I hitting what's recommended for fiber? And where optimization is generally this idea of, you know, playing around with the numbers high and low to figure out the best number, this isn't really optimization. This is just pass-fail. Am I hitting the standard of what the RDA is? Mm-hmm. Even still, it's going to be a tedious process to do that. I've done it on a few days of data. It's quite tedious. So have fun with a week or so. And that's really the only way we can do it because of those other factors I mentioned. We don't eat just magnesium. But it's a great way to be like, okay, am I getting the recommended amount of all of these micronutrients? And if not, then you know, okay, I'm going to start targeting these other foods, get everything up to the level it should be, and see what happens to the weight, health, and performance outcomes.
Okay, so you hinted a little bit there at the practicality, or how maybe we can introduce some practicality to these four different kind of areas that we might want to try to play with in pursuit of optimization. Could we talk a little bit more about what that kind of practicality might look like? Uh-huh. Again, across those areas and across those buckets.
Yeah. I mean, I would treat these as steps. I kind of presented them in the steps that I would do them, you know, first start with only protein, then move on to total calories, et cetera. Ideally, you are keeping other factors in your life constant. You know, stress, lack of sleep, this can affect, you know, your blood glucose test or performance if you go to do it, right? So you try to keep everything else constant, but I would give it a shot for at least 3 weeks because you have to have enough time to quiet the noise of like, did I just sleep more last night or was I in a bad mood yesterday and all of that stuff. So you can't change your macro distribution each day and then, you know, check in with your weight and be like, that was wrong. Like, it needs to be long enough to see if it like is changing in a meaningful way. So I'd implement the change for at least 3 weeks, track on weight, body composition, performance, at least at the beginning and end of those 3 weeks. And again, yeah, in theory, check in on the health markers, but you know, unless they're you going in all the time, you know, that's not going to happen every month. And so this hopefully though, is where the reality starts to set in with people that this is really hard to do. I mean, think about that when I was talking about that macro distribution. Okay, you're going to keep protein the same, go carbs up by 5%, fat down by 5%. Try that for 3 weeks. Okay, repeat it at the next iteration, repeat it at the next iteration. I mean, there's very few people that are so meticulous with their diet that they're really going to get through this process. So again, theoretically, yes, possible to do. Practical for most people, they're not going to get there.
Mm. Yeah. If it was as simple as just like moving numbers on a spreadsheet along, like, yeah, okay. But right. Just like the knowledge of what it looks like to change carbohydrates by 3%.
Right.
And then, given that, that's how you would do it, but that most people won't do that. It's just like most people just won't. Mm-hmm. Where does that leave everybody? Again, if they want to still pursue this idea of optimizing these three buckets, like where does that leave us?
Us, normal.
I imagine it's not like on or off, like it's not a light switch. Like you get to do it if you're willing to do all these things or you don't get to do it at all.
Right.
So where's the dimmer switch here?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this sort of brings us back to that episode we did that was like three pillars of nutrition that drive 90% of success for people. Right. Yep. And the three pillars are establish quality, establish enough protein and keep calories in check. And so again, you know, 800 gram challenge is one of the ways that I like to keep quality in check. So do that. Then you're going to make sure you're hitting at least 0.7 grams per pound of body weight for protein. And then, yeah, you're going to track on total calories to achieve the general weight and body composition that you want, keeping in mind, of course, the limitations of those, and see if all of your markers are moving in the direction or staying in the healthy ranges, and then just keep the diet there. And so what sort of falls away, in my opinion, in this practical scenario versus how I just said you could theoretically optimize is one, doing the microanalysis, and two, really optimizing macronutrient distribution. Well, first, as we mentioned, the micronutrient analysis is tedious. I've done it, doing it a lot all the time. It's just a lot of time. And as long as your diet isn't too weird, they're not trying to be too extreme with their choices, they probably are going to get there. Otherwise, we'd have a lot of nutrient deficiencies like just around us, right? All the time, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that. That kind of falls away. And then also, I don't think that a lot of people need to really optimize their macronutrient distribution. Generally, again, because if people are eating just mix whole foods and they've already set enough protein and they're keeping their calories constant, by default, carbs and fat are just going to fall in a middle ground. They're going to be in this 30 to 40% range, unless they're trying to be, I really want to be low fat or I really want to be low carb. Most people just kind of fall in this middle ground, and that's going to be fine enough for many of us. I mean, even us doing, you know, CrossFit, you know, a few times a week, multiple times a week, something like that, we're still not doing enough CrossFit that the carb volume has to be so high that we're not going to get through our workout or something like that. So it would only be kind of the elite athletes that I would really focus on trying to optimize that, because I think most of us are going to be fine there. And so that's it from a practically optimal perspective on nutrition. It's going to be eat enough quality, assess that with the 800 gram challenge, eat enough protein, assess that with the multiplier, keep your calories in check. And maybe with the general directive, you know, don't eat the same thing every day. You know, stay away from the watermelon and collagen diet. And I think that's kind of the optimal place to be.
Yeah. So that's kind of like the optimization for the 99%, right? Something like that.
Exactly.
Okay. So
exactly.
What might be the limitations to that idea, the optimization for 99%? Is there anything to consider, anything that is worth considering on the flip side of that?
Yeah, I mean, even if you did the optimization of the more detailed approach with the micro calculations and the macro optimization, or even if you do my approach, my more practical approach of just the three things to focus on, neither of them are really optimization. you know, our N of one experiments are simultaneously the best thing that we can do, yet also not really a valid experiment, which is a very interesting combination. You know, and I'm not against them, because we certainly can't wait around, as I said before, like we can't wait around for every double-blind, placebo-controlled, randomized trial to be done to understand what to do in our life. So we have to kind of go ahead with what we can do. But the problem is, and why it's not a valid experiment, is when we change one thing, so many other things change. And so we don't really know what the heck is driving what. You know, if we're doing this optimizing protein idea, when you go to eat more protein and you eat more turkey and beef to reach your protein goal, well, turkey and beef isn't just protein, right? It has other nutrients in it. So is that increase in performance because of the increase in protein or because you're eating more vitamin B12? And so that's sort of the problem with food. It's these mixtures of nutrients such that when one thing changes, many other things change. And unless we have the lab and the scientists collecting all of our data and analyzing it for us, how do we really know what's changing? We don't. The other thing that we can't forget about, especially looking at like a performance outcome, is just what's the confounding issue of time? Again, if we're sticking with this protein optimization idea and you're going to be testing 3 weeks apart, let's say that your goal is more pull-ups. And so during that time, you're also working on pull-ups. Well, maybe at the end, you get more pull-ups simply because of the training stimulus. You've just had more time under tension. And so now you have more pull-ups because you were training more, not because of the protein. And so again, the person might think, oh, it's because my diet changed. It's like, no, you just had another month of training. And then, of course, we also have to remember lifestyle, which I sort of hinted at. You know, somebody might be really stoked on the fact that they're optimizing their nutrition, so they're spending more time also worrying about if they're sleeping enough. And so this might be affecting the outcome, not necessarily the nutrition. And so this is why we kind of have to draw the line at a certain point with all this tinkering on nutrition. Like, we know some basic things matter. We know calories matter. We know that protein helps with muscle. We know that carbs are used in high intensity. You know, micronutrients are essential. Okay, great. So let's optimize those, right? Mm-hmm. Let's do what we can do though there to the best of our ability. And so that's when I say optimize, that's what I mean. All full well knowing there's lots of unknowns about what is driving what and what else that we could possibly do. And once those kind of big pieces in the nutrition are dealt with, then we turn to lifestyle, look at the basic things like sleep, exercise, and stress, do those consistently. And that's what I consider being optimized. Practically optimized maybe is the caveat that I should put on it, not, you know, theoretically optimized. And what's interesting is, you know, is I think we hinted at this at the last episode, over 90% of people aren't there yet. You know, and instead it's all this stuff about like, go get your CGMs and your DNA tests to determine what your best diet is. And unfortunately, that's not how you optimize, at least to any sort of relevant way. And so, no surprise, do the basics, do the basics consistently. Perhaps we've said that once or twice before, and I think you're going to get all the outcomes that you want. And practically speaking, if you really get there, you're not going to want to track on any other data. You've had enough.
I love that. The it almost feels like it's an oxymoron, but the idea of practical optimization.
Yeah.
I really like that. I like that a lot. Fantastic. AC, anything to wrap up this conversation? Or do you feel like we solved everything and everybody's going to be happy and healthy?
I think
now
we solved it again.
Amazing. We're crushing.
Nutrition's done.
Thank you, EC. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. Thank you for your ratings and your reviews. EC and I will be back next week for another episode of The Consistency Project.